Are you wanting to live a life with more clarity and happiness? I'm Tammy Hill, a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex educator, wife, mother, and grandmother. I am also an optimist. I strive to live my life on purpose, with purpose. I'm here to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. Live your why means to align your core values with the way you want to spend your time. Living my why includes bridging the gap of understanding sex as both a sacred marital act and as pleasurable, passionate energy that adds zest and happiness to life. I want you to embrace sexual joy without shame. Integrating your sexual nature for goodness will bring you strength, joy, and peace. Join me this season for the Live Your Why podcast, and together we can live a life full of passion and purpose. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and this is the Live Your Why podcast. I feel so honored today to have Elizabeth Earnshaw on the program, and I've asked her to come on, and we're going to talk a little bit about sexual resentment. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, this is just, I'm a little starstruck for a minute, so I think you're so great. Why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about you and why you do relationships so well?
Yeah, sure. So I am an LMFT like you, right? Mm-hmm. You're also an LMFT. Yeah. So licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been working with couples for like 12 years now, I think. Prior to that, I worked with kids in schools. And so I noticed that I liked working with parents to help them support their kids. And that's kind of how I got into the world of working with couples. I own a practice that's in several states, and I support and train people to become couples therapists as well. And I wrote a book a few years ago called I Want This to Work. And I have another book coming out this year called Till Stress Do Us Part. So love talking about relationships.
I love your book, and now I'm excited to watch for this new one, Till Stress Do Us Part.
Yes.
That's a clever title. Yep.
Thank you. It's kind of self-explanatory, right? Yeah.
Sounds like every couple probably needs that one.
Yes, I think so.
Oh, well, Elizabeth, I really find in my practice, I do mostly sex therapy, but with couples, there sometimes gets to be quite a bit of sexual resentment. And I thought, I'm just going to do an entire podcast on sexual resentment and call in the pro to talk about it. So with sexual resentment, where does resentment stem from? And do you have any suggestions on how a person can pause and maybe nip resentment in the bud?
Yeah, so I think resentment, whether it's sexual or any type of resentment, it comes from a series of events usually, not just one, right? But a series of events in which the person who feels resentful processed the experience as being unappreciated or disrespected or kind of like misunderstood and left out of the equation, right? And so I think that ties into sexual resentment often. But there's this kind of chronic sense. It's not like a one-time thing, but and again of, you didn't think about me, or you don't appreciate everything I do around here. You don't really understand who I am or what I need. And it turns into resentment, I think, when we keep perseverating over it, when we don't talk about it and feel like there's a resolution. So, of course, you might try to talk about it, but nothing comes of it. It's going to make it worse. And then it gets really dug in when we find that we start to see everything as a negative. And so resentment compounds. It's like compounding interest. Mm-hmm. So once it happens, we become resentful over many things. So it's not just, I resent that you don't hug me when you come in the door at night. It's, I also resent the way you leave your fork on the counter instead of putting it in the sink. And I resent the way that you talk to me at night or don't talk to me at night. And so it becomes a lot more dug in. So that's kind of like a quick overview of resentment.
Yeah, I love that. And it goes, I always tell people it's usually kind of couched in some form of self-betrayal where you're not speaking up for yourself. And if you continue not to speak up for yourself, it's going to expand into every area of your relationship eventually. So absolutely. I think we say the same thing. So yeah. What do you tell couples? Is there some little formula or trick that you have to help people stop for a moment and maybe before adding another layer of resentment onto things to stop, and how can they nip it in the bud?
I definitely use name it to tame it first. So I tell people we have to name this. This is resentment. You know, this is what's going on. You're criticizing or getting contemptuous or stonewalling because you resent your partner, or your partner's doing this because they resent you. And if we can use that word, then we can start to think about, where did this resentment come from? Like you said, did it come from this self-betrayal where you felt unappreciated, but you kept doing what you were doing anyway? So you felt like no one really understood what you wanted in the bedroom, but you kind of kept having sex and felt like it wasn't pleasing to you, but now you resent because that act kept happening. Or do you clean up somebody's socks all the time and you're resentful because they're not respecting you, but you also continue to do it? So once we can use the word, then we can say, okay, well, where did these resentments come from? We can name it. It becomes a thing. We can conceptualize it. And then we really start to talk about boundaries, knowing ourselves. So sometimes people are resentful and they don't even realize that they were betraying themselves or doing things that they didn't necessarily feel aligned with them. So getting to know who you are, learning to set boundaries, and also working on negative sentiment override. So how can you start seeing the good in your partner again? It's totally okay for you to be angry about whatever it is that you resent temporarily while we process it. And you have to start recognizing that maybe those, like, what's the opposite of rose-colored glasses? Like, if you're looking through these black, cloudy glasses all the time at your partner, are you willing to start looking for the good and not making everything about they do everything wrong and they can never satisfy what I need in life?
Mm-hmm. Those are such good. I love the things you name things because they're so easy to remember, name it, to tame it, and all of that. I love that. So say, let's go to sexual resentment then, and say maybe something's exchanged between me and my husband and it's offended me, it's bothering me, and I want to show up for myself, but I also am nervous if I do, it's going to cause some kind of conflict or damage to the relationship. What suggestions would you have for me?
First of all, I think, you know, talking through, maybe some of that is real. You know, sometimes it is scary to bring things up because the other person might become offended, or their feelings might be hurt, or they might code whatever you're saying to mean that you're not attracted to them or you don't like them or whatever. And so the first thing I always do when people are worried about bringing something up is, instead of pushing that possibility away, I allow there to be space to talk about that. And so if you're working on that on your own, it's like, journal. What's the worst thing that could happen? They're going to get angry with you. Their feelings are going to get hurt. There's going to be a fight. Like, all of those things might happen. So that's first. It's possible. But the second thing that's really important is remembering that if you don't talk about it, then there's not really a big possibility of getting over the resentment. And so even if it causes momentary conflict or disappointment to bring it up, there's a higher likelihood of resolving it over time if you bring it up. And so you have to have that willingness to do it. You have to be able to take responsibility for moving forward in that way, even though it's hard, in order for things to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said such an important little thing there, that it's easier to do it sooner rather than later. And that's kind of my next question is, often I meet with couples who've been married 40 years and they have this deep rooted sexual resentment, that this pattern has been established for their entire marriage. And oh my gosh, it's so hard to crack a little piece of that heart, to soften it, to get anywhere. So when these patterns are established for a long period of time, is there really any hope for these couples to work through this resentment, sexual resentment especially?
I think there's absolutely hope. It's hard when you come in and there's been resentments for many years. Like I said, it compounds. So by the time you come in, if it's been there for 20 years, then what's also happened is you've started to resent other things too. And so sometimes the couples therapy for a little bit can, if you come into couples therapy for a little bit, can feel a little bit like disjointed because it's like, well, I resent this, I resent that. And you might not feel like you're getting to the core that maybe it started with sexual resentment, but it can absolutely improve. There's going to have to be trust building that happens, talking about things and actually feeling like there's some sort of resolution, changes in behavior, all of those types of things. But as long as there's that willingness and the responsibility taking to move forward, it can change. If there's not willingness, or if either party doesn't want to take responsibility and wants to kind of stick in this pattern, then it is harder or maybe even impossible to change, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think if you've determined that this is your story and it's never going to change, it's really, really hard to think that there's going to be much productive work that gets done.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Sometimes I find that when couples are in this stuck pattern, they actually start kind of labeling each other. Well, he's the high desire partner and he's all about sex, or he's just a little perverted, or he wants to do things that he knows I wouldn't want to do. He has a dirty mind. You know, we start putting...
Yeah, all he cares about is sex.
Right.
He never thinks about any... He doesn't know his emotions. I mean, I think often there can be... Once we resent people, we can start taking a superiority stance. So I also hear a lot of things like, they just don't know themselves and that's why all they want is sex, or they're not an emotional person. They only know how to connect by sex. And so there can be a lot of criticism and blame.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So one thing that I see often is, well, he's always high desire and I'm just low desire. There's nothing I can really do about it. And with this dynamic, when it becomes kind of labeling along with all of the pileup of resentment, do you have anything that helps once you've started labeling people? Or, you know, I know we talked about being stuck and you need to really want to change to change, but I just am curious, what do you do in that situation when they've already got labels even put onto each other?
I try to move away from the labels and just start talking about things like, what's your philosophy on sex? Like, what's the story here? And I also love to use narrative therapy. So for anybody listening, narrative therapy is really looking at stories and the way that we talk about things, right? And it's so like, what's the story of that? Like, where did you decide to call yourself the low desire partner? Where did you decide to say, I have a low libido? Like, what does that mean? You know, like, where, what is the story? Where did you decide that they're high desire? Like, what does it mean to be high desire? Where's, you know, for the partner who's high desire, the critique back is usually something like, they just don't like sex, and like, who could be in a relationship without sex? And it's like, well, where did you learn that, you know, who could be in a relationship without sex? What's the story? So I spent a lot of time talking to people about the story, right? And stories might come out like, well, you know, I wasn't always low desire, but after we had our first kid, I was really tired. And then one time we had sex and it really hurt because I wasn't healed from my C-section. And ever since then, I was really pissed off that my partner wanted to have sex with me when I still had a C-section wound, you know, and I just haven't been able to. So now, and then it's like, well, is it just low desire? Or is it something else? Like, what is the other ways that you could describe yourself? Like, I'm hurt. I'm not understood. I was ignored. I abandoned myself. I did all these other things. So that's a really important piece to me. The other thing I mentioned is philosophies. Like, what do you believe about sex? Mm-hmm. Where did you learn about it? What do you think sex should look like in marriages? What should it look like in a marriage without kids? What does it look like in a marriage with kids? And helping them to really learn to listen to these stories without it being about, we're going to figure out who's right and wrong, or we're going to force your partner to become high desire or low desire or whatever, but like, we're really going to try to understand each other. Mm-hmm. So I back away a little bit from solving the quote problem and more about just understanding, like, what is this really, and why are we using these words?
Oh my goodness. I would just love to sit in, be a fly on the wall and watch you do therapy, because you're just like this fount of wisdom that comes right out, rolls right off your tongue. Those are such good ideas to start wanting to identify, rather than the labels saying, why would you say that about yourself? Or what is your philosophy around sexuality? Where did you learn that? And what stories are you telling yourself is this from that C-section that you spoke of, you know, that happened 8 years ago, and you're still, every time you have sex or thinking about sex, you go back to that same experience over and over. So I think those are such good suggestions. Really good. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk a little more about sexual resentment. Hi, this is Tammy Hill, and I am so darn excited to tell you a little bit about a spring fling couples retreat that I'm planning. This is going to be a spring fling in Seattle. This will be May 17th through 19th, 2024. We're going to be staying at the beautiful Thompson, Seattle, right there on Puget Sound, in the beautiful heart of the Emerald City. You will want to come to this retreat and learn a little bit more about making love techniques, connecting deeper and richer with your spouse, and of course, enjoying beautiful Seattle. Join me May 17th through 19th in this beautiful city. We are back with Elizabeth Earnshaw and talking about sexual resentment. So, Elizabeth, on occasion I get letters from men or women who are really, really steeped in this sexual resentment. And I received one not long ago from a gentleman about his marriage situation. They've been married for 12 years. So let's do a little case study. And I'm going to read this little excerpt from his letter. And then I want you to stab at it. What would you do with this couple? Okay, it's never outright rejection with my wife. She's too kind for that. It's much more subtle. Sometimes after the kids are in bed, we'll sit down on the couch together and turn on the TV. I'll often rub her shoulders or scratch her back. Sometimes I'll kiss her on the neck or slowly move my face nearer to hers. More often than not, she's fully engaged with her phone or her iPad during this time and provides little response or reciprocation to my advances. At times, she'll give what appears to be a preemptive excuse to repel any prospect of physical intimacy. She'll make a comment about how exhausted she is or how she hasn't even had a chance to shower that day. Her body language suggests that what she really means is, "I'm not up for it tonight." Recently, on a night when she could tell that I was hoping for some attention, she said in a defeated tone, "I just wish I was more sexual as a person." The timing of the comment was seemingly odd, but the message was received loud and clear. I would give anything for her to run to me when I came home, throw her arms around me, and kiss me passionately.
Yeah. And so, you know, and that's what he wants from her. And then he tries to do that towards her, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So he wishes she would come up to him and rub his shoulders or give him a hug or kiss him. And so he sits next to her and he leans closer and he touches her and he does all of these things that he would internalize as, this person wants me, they love me, and maybe this is a signal that we can have sex now or some form of intimacy, right? And so one of the things, if I was working with them as a couple, I would want him to be able to step out of that lens and zoom out a little bit and understand that there are a lot of different ways that people feel open to intimacy or feel desired. I would say, and this is of course a stereotype, that working with men, a lot of men have a belief that there's this like spontaneous desire thing that happens and that sex looks a certain way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of men have a belief like this guy, right? Where it's like, if we start touching, then that's going to turn my partner on, and then we should just start having sex on the couch, right? And mm-hmm. it should just happen. Or, you know, I see my wife when I get home and I am ready to go to bed with her. Like, I think I don't care if I've been at work all day, it doesn't matter. And she should, if she really loved me and was turned on, she would want that too. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's this narrative in that relationship about spontaneous desire being desire. And so I would talk to her also. She said the thing, like, I wish I was a more sexual person. I would want to understand that, you know, does it mean that you have to be spontaneous? Or are you a sexual person, but do you prefer if it's like planned? Or do you prefer it's at a specific time or after a date or something like that? And so, again, going back to the stories, but I would also want to talk to them both about their accelerators and their brakes. So for him, it's a turn on to touch. So that's like an accelerator for him, right? If we're on the couch together and we're touching, I will be turned on. Mm-hmm. It's a break to him to have the other person be on their iPad, be distracted, say something like, I haven't showered today, or whatever it is. But does he know what her accelerators and brakes are? And again, many men think that there are only a few accelerators, and they're those very stereotypical, like, we're making out, we're naked, da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there are things that we don't think about. Like, it might be my accelerator is that I've had a day off work. And so I haven't had to, during the break, I was talking to you about the idea of like a nurse at a hospital all day. Maybe this person's partner was working all day, picking people up and touching people and da-da-da-da-da. And so their accelerator is not going to be touched. It might be to have time on their iPad for 2 hours, mm-hmm. and then to go to bed and take a shower and do all of that, and then to move into something else. And so being able to ask your partner, I would tell him, ask your partner, when are you turned on? When are you turned off? Is it at the end of a work day? Is it when you're already in the middle of something? Is it when you haven't taken a shower? And then ask, what can I do to support you to be in the mental space to want to have sex? Instead of saying, why aren't you doing it my way? Why aren't you doing it spontaneously? Why aren't you running to the door? Why aren't you doing all of this? Because that is going to make your partner feel like they're failing you. And it's going to create that statement that she said of, I'm just not a sexual person. Not necessarily because she believes she's not a sexual person, but because your definition of what a sexual person is the overarching definition in the relationship. So I would tell that male partner, start opening that up a little bit. For the female partner, I would ask her to be more communicative about sex and intimacy, and don't just throw out the passive comments. You know, he said he was a little surprised when she said something like, I'm not going to be ready for sex tonight or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was probably like, what? I didn't even ask. But for her maybe to have said something in that moment, like, to me, it seems like maybe you're trying to make a move right now. And right now I'm really, really tired. And here are the times that I tend to be more open to this, or what I would really like from you is X, Y, and Z. That might take engaging with herself a little bit more. You know, she might have to explore, what do I like? Is my type of desire going to be accepted in this relationship? All of those types of things, but really pushing her to be able to express it. The other thing I would encourage her to do is respond to bids. So you don't have to have sex when your partner starts rubbing your shoulders. But when you continue to look at your iPad, what you are expressing is that you are rejecting the bid. You've probably learned somewhere that that's the only way you can get out of sex, right? I'm just going to reject. But can you still turn to your partner and see that there was an attempt at emotional connection there, not just sexual? And put the iPad down for a second and, you know, give him a hug and say, how was your day? You know, here, like, let's cuddle. I'm looking at this thing. Do you want to look at it with me? Of course, then the male partner could say, I was hoping maybe we could have sex. And then you could say, I'm not into that tonight, but I would be happy to cuddle. I'd be happy to watch TV together. But really working on not rejecting these bids from your partner, I think would be important for her to start doing as well.
100%. Pay attention to bids. Don't reject bids. A bid is reaching out, doing anything, trying to get your partner's attention and wanting them to look at you or communicate with you. I love you're quoting Emily Nagoski's work on accelerators and brakes and responsive versus spontaneous arousal or desire. Those are all so easy to break apart and talk about, and really great information. Good answer. What happens when you have this couple and this is the dynamic that's kind of gone on for so long, and we know these are the stories, and they start being able to break down and actually hear each other? They actually are starting to understand each other. What I found is in therapy, when I'm working with a couple and it starts getting into this space where they really are starting to understand and connect, because the sexual part of the relationship has been so conflictual for so long, there's a real fear and hesitancy to even start engaging again sexually. Mm-hmm. How would you help this situation?
First, validate it. Mm-hmm. You know, it is scary. I wouldn't say anything to them like, well, just do it. Just go home and do it tonight. It'll be fine. What are you so scared about? Yeah, it's scary. You don't know like what each other likes anymore. It's been a long time. There's been a lot of feelings associated with it. And I always suggest that people start slow. And so it might even be something like Sensate Focus, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you don't have to have sex this week. It could be kind of paradoxical. You don't have to have sex. But what would it be like if you went home and you rubbed each other's backs before bed? And then like next week, what if you slept naked? And you don't have to have sex, but what if you just slept naked and you kissed? Could we do these slow starts where you know in your mind that it has a stopping point? I think that can be really important for people. Sometimes we don't let ourselves be vulnerable because it's like, well, if I make out with them, then what if it turns into sex? And what if it's all night sex? And what if it's, you know, what if we have to move rooms and there's toys involved and all of this other stuff? And I'm not ready for that. And so if you can put a boundary on it and say, well, why don't you just start by like making out again? And promise each other it's going to stop at making out. And then next week we can say, why don't we start with touching? You know, so I would help them to make that a slow start mm-hmm. most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And another one more thing I see often is when they start doing a little bit to kind of reconnect again, sometimes it starts to get to be this little exchange system where, well, I did that for you, so now I'm expecting you to do this mm-hmm. for me.
Yes, and then resentment starts.
I know. We're back to square one.
We're back to square one. When people are resentful, they start to talk about like who has it harder, who does it more, right? And so if you're starting to try to fix things, one of the things you want to be really careful of is that all of a sudden you don't start using these resentment words again, like, oh, well, because you're high desire, I guess I'll try this for you. You know, this is easy. You want sex. I'm the one really putting myself out there because you're the one that wants sex and I was fine and I'm working harder than you are. So the other partner then becomes resentful or whatever it is. And I think the thing you have to recognize with resentment is that when you have boundaries and you speak up for yourself, it's not going to go in a terrible direction, yeah. right? And so start feeling like, well, I'm the one doing all of this. Number one, I would encourage you to have more of a willingness. The relationship's not going to change unless you do some stuff. And sometimes, unfortunately, relationships are not as beautiful as they can look in advice columns or whatever. Like sometimes you are going to have to do more than the other person and it just stinks. And that's what you have to do to get it so it's balanced again. But the second piece is stand up for yourself. You know, if you really feel like it's an unfair dynamic and you're doing things you don't want to do, say it. I don't really want to do that. And like this, these are some alternatives. What do you think about these? So you can pause at any point, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to get back into that story of I'm doing what I don't want to do.
Right, right. So good. Do you have any other little tidbits about resentment, staying out of resentment?
I think as if you've named it and you want to start to move out of it, obviously you're going to process whatever the stories are, but also you need to start both having a willingness to show more appreciation to each other. And some of this, I say to my clients all the time, this is not going to feel organic. You're going to feel like you're doing a whole bunch of silly homework assignments that like Liz is making you do. And it's not going to be this way forever. It'll start to be more natural. But really, every day while your partner's at work, think of something to text them that you appreciate and be really clear about it. You know, I really appreciated last night that when I kissed your neck, you leaned into me. That meant so much to me. Or, hey, when I was on my iPad, I know you came upstairs and I know that you wanted to hook up, but you saw I was so tired and you sat down next to me, and you put your arm around me and you let me just veg. And that meant everything to me. Like, thank you so much. And I don't mean just with sex stuff, but start to make a really big effort to appreciate each other. And then the other is be willing to respond to bids. We talked about that just a little bit ago. When somebody is attempting to connect with you, instead of turning against the bid and being like, oh, not again, don't you see I'm busy right now? Or turning away from it and just paying attention to your work or your TV show or your kids or whatever it is, starting to make a true effort and have an intentional focus on responding to those bids. That's going to help you stay out of resentment. And that's also going to help you start to move away from it if you're in it.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So Liz, how can people find you?
So you can find me in a lot of different places, but the easiest place is probably my website, which is elizabetheearnshaw.com, or Instagram at Liz Listens. So those are two simple places to find me.
Yeah. And I just recommend Liz's work. It's so excellent. Often in my work with couples, and sometimes even just with me processing what's going on in my own mind with my relationships, I will open your book, We Want This to Work. I open that and look and see, oh, this makes sense. Yeah, that's what I need to do. You just are full of such good wisdom. Because this is the Live Your Why podcast, I always like to have my guests kind of finish up telling us a little bit about their why. So Liz Listens. I love that. What is your why?
I think, so when I saw that I was going to answer that question, I was like, oh, that's such a good question. Like, what is my why? And I think like my initial answer was my family is my why. But I think that when I thought about it more, like, yes, my family, but that's a part of the bigger picture, which for me is just like really enjoying life is my why. And so whenever I'm working through something or trying to figure out what's going on, why is there this conflict in my life, or why is there this drama, I always come back to, this is my life right now. And how do I figure out a way to enjoy it? Because tomorrow is not promised. And so whether it is being, you know, really focusing on the fact that I value family and like my kids are always there, like even if we're fighting with the homeowners association, I don't need to let that be my cloud, right? Like my kids, my husband, they're there, and there's the ability to do this work that I love and everything else. So I'm constantly just going back to, how do I live this life in a way where I feel at peace and grateful and like really tuned in to how amazing it is to live life, even when it's hard. And I would say that that's my why.
It's so beautiful. You are such a beautiful person. It's so fun to visit with you.
Thank you. You're a beautiful person too. And it's so good to connect. I can't believe it's been so long.
Yeah, it was fun. We did an Instagram live about in 2020, I think it was, on preparing for extended family exchanges during the holidays. Yes. That's very good too. So,
yeah, it was a while ago, but it felt like it was just yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Liz, so much.
Thank you.